We can figure this stuff out as long as we're not lazy about it. As long as we don't take the path of least resistance. Scientists, citizens, workers, entrepreneurs, together as Americans, we disrupt those stale old debates.
That's US President Barack Obama with a common refrain that we can solve the problem of climate change if we innovate and green the economy. Daniel Nyberg and Christopher Wright disagree. Christopher is a professor of organisational studies at the University of Sydney, and Daniel is professor of management at the University of Newcastle. They've written a book together called Climate Change, Capitalism and Corporations, Processes of Creative Self-Destruction. Quite provocative, I think deliberately so. Let's start this conversation. Creative self-destruction, what do you mean by that?
The basic idea is that we are destroying ourselves. So the creativeness is that we find new ways to destroying ourselves. So no, it's not the old, just digging up coal, but we find these fossil fuels way down in deep oceans. We frack for it. We use new type of technology to find this way of destroying ourselves. So we're being creative about the destruction.
But aren't we being creative, to give you the counter story, to try and fix it as well? By the same token, we're trying to create solutions which are also creative and innovative.
But knowing that if we're going to have a limit of 2 degrees, 80% of our fossil fuel has to stay in the ground that we know of today. And still, we find new ways to find new type of fossil fuel. So we have to leave 80% in the ground, and we are creative in finding new fossil fuel that is absolutely detrimental for the environment.
What are the most popular ways of tackling climate change internationally?
At the moment, there's a big focus on emissions mitigation, emissions reduction, and there are these range of national targets in the lead up to COP21 with various nations coming on board. That's the big focus. The problem is the levels of emissions reduction that are being proposed are nowhere near what we need for avoiding an average 2 degrees global warming. In fact, the most recent estimates suggest that these current conditions, we're looking at 3 to 5 degrees C. So there's a disconnect between the rhetoric of action and proposed targets and commitments that nations are making and what we actually need to do. And so our book is really sort of focused on, well, why does that happen? Why is there this fundamental disconnect between the sort of the rhetoric of climate and action, and it's an urgent issue and it's us, and what we're proposing to do in terms of tangible political and economic action? The fundamental issue is decoupling economic growth from its material impacts, and we're not doing that. So if we were able to somehow radically decarbonize our economy in such a way that we could avoid the carbon emissions that we're emitting and economic growth, that'd be marvellous. But at the moment, all we're doing is, in some companies and some economies at a small degree, able to decouple at a relative level. But in terms of aggregate decoupling, that's not happening.
When do you think you'll win this argument? I mean, given there is even a resistance to reducing emissions at the level that we're trying to, you're asking effectively for a much more radical solution, something that takes it much further. Do you think anyone's prepared to both champion that politically and also take the risk of the job consequences of that? Because, of course, growth, you know, we don't talk about growth in the vacuum. Growth delivers jobs and prosperity. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, look, we realise that what we're arguing is politically unimaginable at the current time. But the reality is we will either change what we're doing in a fundamental way or we'll be changed by the impacts of climate change. And it's not something in the future. It's happening now. And what we are going to see over the next couple of decades is a ramping up of the impacts of the emissions we've produced over the last 100, 150 years. So that's locked in, 1 degree. We've got that already, or soon will have. And so the implications are, if we don't change radically, and politically maybe we won't, we'll certainly wake up when the implications of that become more and more evident.
What are the alternatives to limitless growth?
Well, in any case, some form of limit to growth is needed. We're talking about degrowth, trying to somehow shrink the economy, and also perhaps try to challenge the idea that society is dependent on the economy, when it's actually the other way around. The economy, corporations are dependent on society, and society in turn is dependent on the environment. So challenge the idea that catastrophe comes with an economic collapse, when it probably will come with an environmental collapse.
Okay, but there is reality linked to economic collapse. There is reality to mass unemployment that is a consequence of deliberately limiting growth. How do you deal with that? Because that's a whole other disaster, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it does lead to very dire consequences. So there's a debate at the moment globally around the need for climate justice and climate transition. How do you transition away from a fossil fuel-dependent economy to something that's more sustainably balanced? That's an important conversation to have, and that's where we need to devote resources. But at the moment, the debate is all around market mechanisms, freeing up trade barriers, encouraging multinational corporations, greater free rein, and basically winding back environmental protection. So we're going 180 degrees the wrong way from what we should be going.
You've conceded that politically your suggestions are unlikely to gain traction. So what do you hope to do then by raising these issues, given you say that politically and at a sort of grassroots level, you can't imagine people signing up to less growth, less jobs, really? There is a reality there that would make it a very difficult decision for people to make unless they're hardened climate activists. And so what do you want? What are the consequences you want from sparking this debate?
Well, you see, I think contrary to that, a growing grassroots mobilisation. We saw it in New York City in 2014, 300,000 people out in the streets of Manhattan. You see around the world climate justice movements emerging, grassroots resistance to coal seam gas fracking in Australia and elsewhere, resistance to fracking in the UK. So people are waking up at a community level to the local implications of these things and also to the global implications of the future that we're leaving to our children.
Many hopes are pinned on the UN climate conference in Paris in December. The whole world is watching, really. This is the pinnacle moment for this debate. Do you think anyone will bring ideas to the table that involve radically rethinking the system?
They wouldn't be invited. So, no, I don't think we should have any hopes for that. As we see now, it's based part funded by the fossil fuels, and the keynote speakers are all suggesting market-based mechanisms that is not challenging anything that is happening.
You paint a pretty bleak picture. Is there an upside?
I think... Yes, there are social movements happening around this. I also think we are more than consumers as human beings. Now, addressing us as non-consumer roles, as fathers, mothers, that would help us in creating perhaps the change that's needed.
But fathers and mothers, this is your problem, isn't it? Worry about their children getting employment being also... growth is so linked to opportunity. How do you turn around that thinking?
Well, I think the other part about, certainly in the people we've spoken to, senior managers in big corporations, they recognise their role as parents as well. And a lot of them can see that they are very worried about the future they are leaving to their kids in the next decade, two decades. So there is this realisation there that it's not just about the economy and jobs, it's about leaving a habitable climate and environment for their children and their grandchildren. And the available science suggests we're not doing that.
Wow, it's a lot of food for thought, and you've certainly provoked my thinking and I'm sure lots of people's thinking. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having
us. My pleasure.
And that's Daniel Nyberg, Professor of Management at the University of Newcastle, and Christopher Wright, Professor of Organisational Studies at the University of Sydney. Their book is Climate Change, Capitalism and Corporations, Processes of Creative Self-Destruction.